Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague from The Athletic, Stuart Mandel. Stu, we are coming off the first weekend of March Madness. It is always probably the best weekend of college basketball. I know that people love the Final Four, you know, weekend. But because you get crazy upsets and you get storylines that pop out of nowhere, seemingly. You were following your alma mater, which fortunately for you was only a couple-hour car ride away. Northwestern didn't make it out of the first weekend. What was your experience like being there?
First of all, Bruce, the first weekend of the tournament is just unbelievable. It's 4 days of craziness. I'll watch the whole tournament, but I just think the first weekend's the best part. You know, I'll watch Sweet 16, Elite Eight, I'll watch Final Four, but there's just nothing like it. And if you remember, so Thursday, like 2 hours into the day, Furman has that crazy ending to beat Virginia. So yeah, it worked out really well. So full disclosure, I have not been to a college sporting event that I wasn't covering. No, that's not true. I did go to a Northwestern football game for homecoming about 5 years ago. But football, I can't, because it's our job and my beat, like I can't really get into Northwestern football as a fan. You know, I follow it like I follow other programs. Basketball, no such reservations. And it's just been crazy to get to go to the tournament. They've only ever made it twice. I got to go the first round in 2017 in Salt Lake. And then when the bracket popped up and they're in Sacramento, it was like, of course I got to go to that. But in the 2017 one, I was credentialed and on press row. This one, my buddy and I, we bought tickets for this evening session. You know, in the NCAA tournament, they divided up. I think it's ridiculous, but they divided into two different sessions. So your ticket only gets you into two games. And it just couldn't have worked out better. We get up there.
What was the other game?
So the early session was Missouri, Utah State, and then Arizona, Princeton. So our plan was just go to a sports bar nearby and watch games until it was time to go in for the Northwestern session. We get there and it's halftime and Arizona's only winning by one. And I was like, we should try to get in for the second half in case this turns out to be a historic upset. Brokers were obviously just basically giving away tickets at that point. So we got in.
When you say giving away tickets, like how much?
$25.
Thank you.
$25 to get in and you could sit pretty much anywhere. That's the other secret about first round pods. They're not sold out. And lo and behold, Princeton pulled it off, which was so, because we were behind the Arizona basket. And Arizona has got some big dudes, right? Like you just keep waiting for them to pull away and they never did. So that was really cool to see that moment of history. Then you have to clear the arena and they let everybody back in or anybody that has tickets to the second session. And that's when all the purple people started showing up. And there were a lot. And I got to give credit to Northwestern alumni. I know our school gets a lot of crap for 23,000 people at the home football games. But if it's a bowl game or the NCAA tournament, they travel. Pat Fitzgerald was there, saw him on the way in. Darren Revelle, some other luminaries. Yeah, it was fun. They basically led from start to finish. And the day just couldn't have worked out any better. And then we went to dinner afterward and then hit the road. I didn't stick around for my ticket also got us into the UC, you know, we could have stayed for the UCLA UNC Asheville game. That was a massacre. So didn't go back Saturday because we had a lot of family obligations. In fact, our first softball game of the year was Saturday, Bruce. My 8U division coaching debut, which ended in a 0-0 tie. But I consider it a win.
Been throwing gas.
Well, the kids pitch, and it's more that the kids are hitting for the first time, not on a tee. But we got the bases loaded one inning. They never got anybody to third, so I consider it a W. And then watched the Northwestern game Saturday night on TV, and I don't think I've ever been more invested in a NCAA tournament game. It's disappointing they didn't win, but at least it was. They were in it till the end, and just a cool experience. You did not see as much of March Madness, I believe, as we did. You
missed like to...
the 16-over-1.
That's a crazy thing. So I saw random bits of the tournament. I probably saw like 30% of the games, and so I saw the Furman upset. I saw that happen. I saw a bunch of Princeton, right? I watched Alec Pierce's brother put up like 16 rebounds as a freshman. I think it was yesterday, or maybe it was 2 days ago now. It's like kind of blurring together a little bit the whole weekend. But there felt like nothing fluky when they beat Mizzou, right?
The crap out of Mizzou.
What I thought was one of the things that I love most about the first weekend of the tournament is like it's like folk heroes happen, right? And so Purdue, Princeton's like number 8 man is a shooting guard who just came in. I was like, this kid only had 18 points last year total. He had 17 points in the second half, and he was like hitting from deeper and deeper, and it's like you're watching it. Blake Peters, he was the kid who like screamed into the camera, mm-hmm. Anything is possible, and God bless him, because that's way bigger than just basketball, right? But yeah, so the Purdue FDU thing. So it happens on Friday, and I watched some, and Tobin Anderson's the coach at FDU. And
you're telling me you knew who that was?
Well, I knew who it was because of the play-in game early in the week. And Tobin Anderson's locker room speech after they won a couple of nights earlier, I couldn't tell if he had, if he said, I don't want Purdue to hear for this, or I want Purdue to hear this, because it sounded like he said both. And, I remember the commentators in the studio were like, all right, you don't have to worry about like Matt Painter going to play that as both, but the players are going to hear it, right? Mm-hmm. Well, obviously the players are going to try to beat them regardless. So I had that in my mind. Well, the Pee Wee football team I coach, we have practice on Friday. So I came home and I basically flipped my computer up and put on YouTube TV, and they played the exact same clip when I started. And I was like, ooh, how bad did they get blown out? And then all of a sudden they were like, they put up the score. It was like 53-48. I'm like, oh my God. I was like, this guy not only called his shot, but it was like 16-1. Obviously, it's happened once before. And it was like, man, that's a game I probably didn't want to miss, but that's what happens. And so, a pretty wild first weekend. And look, this is why we love sports, because crazy stuff happens. We'll see how much more crazy stuff will happen over the next 2 weeks.
Real quick, I got almost nothing right about the my bracket is just done for.
Who is your Final Four?
Gonzaga, who's still alive. Houston, who's obviously still alive, but I lost Arizona on the morning of the first day, and Duke, which I watched the end of that game in the parking lot after
Tennessee
the softball game.
Them up, yeah.
Yeah, they did. No, real quick, Sam Vecenie from The Athletic. So the scene you're talking about, for people who don't know, is they had a locker room video where the FDU head coach, right, says. Now, he didn't say it was him. I think it got confused that he said, the more I've watched them, I think we can beat them.
The more I watch Purdue, the more I think we can beat them.
But he was actually relaying what one of their assistants said. And he said, and I don't have the assistant's name in front of me. He's a guy who was only in his like first year as a full-time assistant coach. He's like 26 years old. By the way, shout out to the FDU SID, who was a junior in college. He was relaying that, you know, such and such said, the more I watch the tape of Purdue, the more I think we can beat them. And Sam Vecenie talked to that guy, to the assistant, who first of all was, because he says, he goes, where's such and such? I feel like I should look the guy's name up since we're talking about him so much. All right, so here's the exact quote. I don't want Purdue to see this, but I walked into breakfast this morning and Cam, what'd you say to me, Cam? Where's Merles? He said to me, the more I watch Purdue, the more I think we can beat them. Let's go shock the world. Cam Merles is the assistant, and he was in the bathroom at the time that he was saying that. But, you know, he goes on to explain how that, you know, kind of what the plan was and how they beat them. So I got to say, I've gotten very little right about this tournament, but I watched a lot of Big Ten basketball down the stretch because of Northwestern. And the whole time I was like, how is Purdue a projected one seed? They have no athletes. They've got this 7'4" center, and basically he's their entire team. Well, this guy said the scouting report was basically, they've got freshman guards. They don't have depth behind them. We press a lot. We've got graduate senior guards. You know, we're going to press those guards and make them beat us. And they did. And it just goes to show that you always say the NCAA tournament's all about matchups. It really is. Because I'm reading that and I'm like, well, if it's that easy, how come the Big Ten teams weren't able to do that to Purdue? But he had some good stats in there about, you know, Big Ten teams did press them a little bit, but not nearly as much as FDU did. So that was a great story. And we should probably try to talk some football now.
Yes, we should definitely talk some football. There's a few things we hit on, but there was something that really has kind of kept on. So you had said the other day, you said on Saturday you had your daughter's first real softball game, right? And so I am still coaching my kids' football team. And one thing that, like, I thought about a bunch this weekend, and it's, you know, especially when we're both similar staging in parenting. And I wanted to ask you this question because it's something that really kind of stayed with me this weekend, which is, like, basic. How has football changed your life?
That's a pretty deep question to just throw at me like that.
Yeah, but I want you to think about it on the fly, because I'll start by explaining this. What I've noticed in my own self after covering football, whether it's college football or in general, for 25 plus years now, you know, and some of it is, I've been fortunate. I've had good access to things. So I've been in locker rooms of speeches and different things and, you know, been at practices and heard different things. But what I cannot, you know, impress upon people enough is a lot of the quote, I think when we're in the media, there's a lot of people who will do this. And I'm sure I've done this at times where you feel like it's just coach speak and it's jaded and it's not, you know, whatever, and it just feels like it's cliche. But the reason why a lot of it is that way is because those things are actually bigger than football. And where I'm going with this is, like, you know, I have these conversations, and I'm mostly with my son, but certainly with my daughter too, and how these things carry over. And it's really amazing what you can kind of absorb, where it turns into really parenting more than coaching. And it's weird because, like, obviously you and I both got our careers from football, right? Because if it wasn't still, we would have left the business or been shoved out of the business, right? But the thing that the more I realize, and a little of this will tie to college basketball too, because, you know, and this is kind of why I wanted to segue a little bit off of the Purdue game, where there was a post-game question that Matt Painter was hit with, and he just kind of really expounded on it in a way that, like, I think sometimes we think of things really on the surface and don't realize what's behind it, right? And, you know, for instance, it took me a while to realize that college football programs, after the coach's availability, the coaches are back in the office after practice and they're watching film and they're poring over every minute detail that's on there. you know, and it's like the day doesn't end for them when we go home. And I think the more we learn those lessons and the more we kind of are kind of rooted in that, I think there's a lot we can learn, if that makes sense to you. I would ask you this, because I feel like I'm speaking to the wall right now a little bit, because I can't see your face and I can feel exasperated. But is there anything you have taken in your short time of a year and a half of coaching your daughter where you feel like it's something that you have gotten because of what your job is? And if the answer is no, that's all good.
I get it. No, I get it. Yes, absolutely. There's this thing called chemistry, right? That comes up a lot when you're talking to coaches, when you're talking to players, frankly, where I think we have a tendency in football to, you know, football probably more than most sports, right? There's so many stats. There's so much X's and O's to it, right? Like probably more than other sports
way more than other sports.
Yeah. There's actually, we
did behind the scenes at Illinois when they were undefeated, when they had D Brown and Darren Williams, mm-hmm. they were undefeated. And me and a couple of colleagues spent a week on the road with them. They spent like, I don't even know if they spent an hour doing a scouting report. Whereas with a football, you know, operation, it's so much more intensive into everything that goes into it. Obviously there's more games in college basketball, but it's just a different game.
And also just like the way the games are broadcast, right? Like you watch a football game, especially an NFL game, so much of what the analysts talk about is, okay, what did the quarterback see here? Oh, the defense was bringing this guy. Like, you know, they're really trying to go deep into to explain to you what's going on the field. I'm watching the NCAA tournament this weekend, and granted, it's probably amplified in the NCAA tournament. They're not talking a lot about that. A lot of it is about the stories of the players, right? I feel like Jamie Erdahl was the MVP of the weekend. She got so much, so much happened at her site, and she had so many great interviews. But a lot of what the sideline reporters do at those games is tell you the stories of the players. Okay, so my point being, it's easy to forget that these are actually in football in particular, like they've got helmets over their faces. You don't see them. They're just like everybody's referred to as here's the blitzing cornerback or whatnot. They are real people. They have relationships with people the way you and I do. And what I see in softball, and then granted, we're talking 7, 8, 9 year olds. You know, we had our first practice. There were a few girls who knew each other from school or whatnot, but that was like little pockets. Most of them didn't know each other. 3 weeks later, friendships are forming. They were coming up with chants in the dugout to cheer on their teammates. Like they're having fun. And granted, this is very, very youth level. But if you play it out to what you're talking about, I mean, on a much, much bigger scale, right? You could absolutely see where a football team that does way better. Let's take Tulane last year, right? A team that did way better than expected. Some of it was they had this ridiculous running back, and some of it is they got a really good coach. But I've had to guess, if you were in the locker room every day, you would see a team that was really tight and really close. And then some of these teams that tank, and they're like, what's going on? Why is this team, you know, they were picked to win the Oklahoma last year. Like teams that picked to win the conference and they're having a terrible season. Could be some bad chemistry in the locker room. And I think that stats don't always explain the full story. So I think that's where you were asking me, like where you wanted me to go with it, was some sort of parallel between what I'm learning coaching kids and what I caught.
Yeah, I think it's more about the parenting lessons you can probably glean from that as much as anything else.
Well, what was cool for me this weekend in parenting was this is really the first year Madeline fully understands, is excited about March Madness and her bracket. And yesterday on Sunday, after watching these games for 3 days, she's like, Daddy, I want to play basketball. We don't have a basketball hoop. We have like a, you know, one of those toy basketball mm-hmm. hoops that go at this point, she's almost outgrown. And we played a full on, like first was first one to 21 and then it became first one to 42. And she was, mimicking the things that she had seen on the court, right? Straight up to like, I was shooting. I said, "Oh, you fouled me. I'm going to shoot a free throw." And she's like, "Okay, I guess that means I stand over here." So the things they absorb, you know, I think we don't give nearly enough credit to. And, you know, so to your point, like that's a very micro example of that. But I think as she continues to play sports, and especially as the coach, I'm going to see more and more that she's taking the lessons from the game and applying them to real life.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
So there's a story I'm pretty excited that I worked on. It's running this week, and it's about coaching transitions. And it's something I started, you know, I've had conversations with coaches on programs that did well, and the programs that had dreadful consequences, meaning their head coach got fired midseason. And one of those programs is Nebraska. And it got me to thinking, Scott Frost went from having one of the greatest short-term runs at UCF to one of the most disappointing tenures in the last decade plus, where, you know, I both thought he was going to be a great hire, and it was as far from great as it could be, pretty much. And why does that happen, right? You do coaching grades, and especially when it gets to the group of five stuff, I'm like, okay, why are you giving this guy an A versus a B versus, and we're all guessing, right? But I think so much, and talking to coaches who have either been on staffs or actually been the head coach, it's really fascinating to dig into why did this work out and why did it not? Because a lot of it, way more than we probably ever realized, is timing. And it's what you inherited, when you did. I mean, I had some like really fascinating stuff about, you know, Kevin Sumlin takes over for Mike Sherman and why it's really a key point is who you replaced and what the dynamic was. And so that, I think, also speaks to the chemistry. And I talked to guys who are captains on some of those teams of, you know, players that were inherited and why it worked and their perspective. And again, I think it, you know, to take a step back and try to tie this all together with the really broad question I asked you, was when we did the top 25 coaches, I think it's a really good exercise for us as college football fans, because it hopefully forces you to look at the game and look at the coaches and look at the teams through a different lens. And for me, that turned out to be okay, you know, because we're wildly all over the board on why, you know, like 2 years ago, you didn't have Jim Harbaugh on your list, right? And probably 5 years ago, you probably had him third, right? I mean, you have him fourth. And so it's like, how did this, or Jimbo Fisher? Like at some point, I bet you had Jimbo Fisher in your top five, right?
Oh, yeah.
And now all of a sudden, I mean, you almost didn't have him at all. And I think what changes, you know, I said to you, and I've said this a bunch, use this term, I was like, it's not like they forgot how to coach, but there are a lot of things that go into it. And so when we talk about like you, I'm glad you, and we did not tee this up and say, hey, Stu, I want you to use the word chemistry. And I didn't, you know, in the context of how you used it was not really the same way I was looking at it, but it really applies. And, you know, I think when we're seeing it in college basketball, like I go back to the Matt Painter explanation, somebody was like, well, are you, you know, like, how is this gonna, you know, how much are you gonna talk about it? And his answer was like, it's not the talking, it's the work they're gonna have to do. And it's the hurt that they're gonna, it's like, it's gotta motivate you to do that and to respond to it. And like, you know, hats off to him for standing there and whatever, any other questions on this? Cause it's obviously a, you know, an embarrassing moment if you're a coach to be on the other end of that, of the other side of the March Madness and all. So, I mean, those are things that I feel like I really love about sports and love about the job. And it's a little challenging to articulate it, especially with, you know, me throwing it at you, and we probably come at it honestly from different
Bruce really points. Did throw that at me. I don't know. He just said, I've got something planned for the show. He didn't tell me what. And that was quite the deep question you threw at me.
Well, it's weird because I'm looking at it, and granted, I'm looking at it at a different lens because maybe I'm dealing with a little bit older kids, and I'm also dealing with it like I am bouncing stuff off of coaches and be like, okay, you know, like, I don't know. It's really interesting. Some of the stuff that I think can be very applicable, because I don't think, I could be wrong, but I don't think your daughter's going to be the next Jenny Finch, and I don't think my son is going to be the next Walter Payton. So, but what you hope is the stuff that, you know, like you said, the friendships that they're probably going to have or that they are developing, but also the experiences and how it carries over, I think, is just like the lessons that, you know, again, there's so many great things that came from it. I go back to the, you know, Blake Peters, you know, yelling into the screen about that, like after they did that, it resonates, right? That's why I think we love sports.
So you mentioned Scott Frost and how that went sideways. There was another example of that recently, maybe not quite as drastically. Tom Herman wins a national championship as an OC at Ohio State, the third string quarterback. He was, you know, that he helped get ready. Then he goes to Houston. He's only there two seasons. He turns Houston into kind of a national power. They beat Lamar Jackson on a Thursday night. They beat Baker Mayfield. He gets the Texas job. LSU and Texas were, you know, fighting over him. Everybody wanted Tom Herman. And 4 years later, he's out. Tom Herman, now he's been out of college coaching, been out of college coaching for two seasons, and he got the job this year at FAU. Speaking of March Madness, March Madness darling FAU. Chris Vanini, who was on this show a couple weeks ago, Group of Five guru, did a story on him. And I'm reading it, and you should go to The Athletic and read the story as well. And I don't know anything about FAU's personnel or whatnot, but I'm just thinking, I think he's going to do really well there. I think the Texas job, the unique pressure of being the Texas coach, every little thing is magnified. I don't think he handled that well. But he also wasn't like going 3-9. I mean, the season he got fired off of, they finished in the top 25. It just wasn't he didn't turn him into a national championship contender, which is what Texas fans expect. So I would be curious your perspective. He's been away 2 years. He seems recharged, and he's coaching at a place where Lane Kiffin won. You can win there. You're in a great area for football recruiting, but you're also not under the magnifying glass of the Texas Longhorns.
So I would ask you, you said, I think he's going to do very well there. Is very well win the same, about roughly the same as what Lane Kiffin did?
Lane Kiffin won two conference titles in 3 years. So you know, I don't know enough about, by the way, FAU is moving up to the AAC this year, right? So they're going to be,
instead it's going to be harder for them to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. I would think there'll be a transition period there. You're going, granted, it's not the Cincinnati, Houston, UCF, AAC. It's going to be more like Conference USA, but you've still got Memphis in there. That's a good program.
You still got Tulane who's doing Tulane's well. Tulane's
still there. But I think he could, I mean, I think he could win a, well, let me stop short of that. He didn't actually win the conference title with Houston, did he?
No.
I think he can get them a lot better, have them in the mix to win that conference within a couple years. And I have to assume if he does do well there, he'll get another shot at a Power Five.
Yeah, I mean, I've known Tom Herman for a long, long time, dating back to his GA days at Texas even. So it's a really long time. I'm curious where he's at mentally, emotionally right now in his career. Because he was like a rocket ship that took off. You know, he was... So some of the stuff that I think ended up costing his job at Texas, I don't think this was just wins and losses. There was a lot of awkward things that end up like probably, you know, talking to people at Texas where like they don't really trust him. He kind of lost the team before they made that, you know, move. We did some of the games there and I think that was hard. And I think some of it was the management of people and whether that includes staff or that includes players. And so, you know, Tom Herman's really smart. That's something that's been said long before he became a head coach. It is an interesting thing. And, you know, I'm glad Chris got out in front on this story. I'll be honest. I have no idea how this is going to go, you know, because you just, you know, you're right. Lane won there. I think you can win there. But like, I think it's like how he manages stuff and hopefully coach, you know, I don't want to say matured, but hopefully, you know, you keep evolving and you know, how that comes through because like it almost like it imploded at Texas. You know, he had that year where I think it was 2018 was the year they beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. They finished in the top 10, you know, and I feel like, and maybe this is an oversimplification, but I feel like Sam Ehlinger really kept the program together because of his, not just for his character, but I feel like it was kind of wobbly for a bit. And Sam was not Joe Burrow, but he was still a really good college quarterback. And then it just started to kind of come apart at the seams, it felt like. And so now he's in a way different place. He's got some familiar faces on his staff, you know, who know him. And I don't know. I mean, what did you like, again, I think the question is going to be, you know, how much he's grown from there. I think if it's the Tom Herman from Texas, I don't think it's going to go as, you know, he's going to have the success Lane Kiffin has.
No, first of all, to the point,
it's got to be 2.0.
Well, to your point earlier about coaches don't forget how to coach. I mean, I think one thing that doesn't get nearly enough. So these college basketball teams are March Madness, right? It's 13 players, couple managers. I think they have 3 full-time assistants. The sheer amount of people that the head coach of a Power Five program is responsible for is just staggering. It's probably between the players, the coaches, the support staff, blah, blah, blah. Like it's like 150 people, right? That you're in charge of. And, you know, I think what you were driving at there, I mean, what I saw him kind of flip his personality, right? From being kind of the fun loving, you know, remember Houston, they made a big deal out of it. I've seen like every game that was on TV about how he would give a hug and a kiss to every player that came off the bus before the game. It felt like at Texas, right from the beginning, he became like an authoritarian. Like he was just much more. It was just like a 180, So all I, what I, one of the things I gleaned from his, from Chris's story is that he's kind of back to being, he took them to the beach in Boca. He's dancing at practice. Like, I think he might be, if without the high expectations, without the pressure cooker, he might be more himself. I don't think he was himself at Texas. I think he was trying to be something that he thought that program needed. Like, that program has been, has had this country club reputation, right? Going back to the end of the Mack Brown era. And I guess he thought they needed a kick in the butt. And like you said, like, I think he had kind of turned off a lot of people behind the scenes, including his own players by the end of it.
I think one of the things that's going to be interesting in what you said about be himself, Tom Herman has has a unique quality in coaching. Like, do you remember that there was an episode, the Seinfeld episode, where there was a woman that he was dating who looked like, who like always looked different, like three different people depending on the lighting? Like, Tom Herman is a little like that, where you look at pictures of him and it's like, he doesn't quite look the same. You know, he's like,
he never looks the same in two pictures. It's the craziest thing. It's a phenomenon, to the point where Chris Vanini tweeted out a picture where Drew Locke, you remember the backpack thing?
Yeah.
Stopped by an FAU practice. And, you know, he said, like, you know, they've made up. And the picture, I guess, is a picture of Drew Locke, who I recognize, and Tom Herman. But I'm like, is that really Tom Herman? He never looks the same in two pictures.
He doesn't. And I think, and it's been that way for a while, especially, you know, from Houston to Texas and then going beyond, especially his time at Texas. But I think the thing is, it's kind of connected. It's like, okay, who is Tom Herman, and what, you know, like, who actually is Tom Herman? Right. And I think, you know, look, I think it's going to be really interesting. You know, he has some really good assistants he put together on the staff, you know, and I think it'll help. David Beatty, who's like his receivers coach, has been a head coach in a really dire situation because he took over after Charlie Weiss at Kansas. He knows him really well. I mean, what's interesting on top of that is Ed Warner, who was the O-line coach at Ohio State. And that was, you know, like, that staff back then, remember, that was in the Zach Smith days. You know, that was a rocky ride coming out of there. And Ed Warner's a good O-line coach, though, you know. So I'm really interested to see how this plays out.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Some families were born into. Some families are made from the ones we meet along the way. Our families are built on love and traditions, the memories we share, and knowing that life is better because we're together. Pure Life, 100% pure quality water, refreshing every moment together. Visit purelifewater.com and discover where to buy Pure Life.
All right, well, then we got another coach who's got the ultimate rebuilding job. That's Dion, Coach Prime. They had their first spring practice, I believe, on Sunday. Colorado sent out a clip of his press conference. I watched it. He's wearing a big cowboy hat because he's into Yellowstone right now. You know, I know we've talked about this before, about the Dion effect there, but somebody brought up to him and he didn't realize it. ESPN is only showing one spring game of any school on their main channel this spring, and it's Colorado, not Alabama, not Georgia, who they are showing on another channel, Colorado. I saw one of the reporters tweet that they've sold 30,000 tickets to the Colorado spring game already. Last year, there were like 1,800 fans in the stands. It's just amazing how much attention and excitement he has created before he actually coaches a first game. Now, haven't seen the players, haven't seen the team. That was probably the only part of the press conference where he did go into coach speak. Talking about, oh, you know, they got a lot of work to do. They got to get used to our tempo, et cetera, et cetera. But I would ask you, I don't remember the date. Will you watch Colorado spring game when it comes on TV?
Absolutely, I will.
Yeah.
And I will definitely watch Colorado's opener at TCU. So here's what I think is going to be like them. I think they are going to end up somewhere like Jed Fish's first year and his second year, which the first year was like really rough. The second year they were like a dangerous team. Right. And they were, you know, were they 5-7, but they had some talent. I feel like they will be close to that, what Arizona was last year. But you look at the first five games they have. I'm going to read them to
you. It's rough.
At TCU, who's rebuilding. Then they're home to Nebraska. It's a fun little old rivalry game, but Nebraska's definitely rebuilding. Colorado State, at Oregon and USC. Do you think it's realistic? Because I think they should beat CSU. What chance do you give them of getting through that 3-2?
It's so hard to say because just don't know, you know, how good is his son? Is he like a transformative quarterback? You know,
his son, what will be different for him is usually his son has had more talent than the teams he's playing. And, right. You know, certainly against Oregon and USC, that's not going to be the case. It's probably not going to be the case against TCU, but TCU lost a lot of really good players. They're going to have to go chase Chandler Morris around, and he's good, and they'd still have some speed, and it's on the road, but that's kind of a homecoming of sorts for Deion because we know his ties to that area.
Yeah, I'd be highly surprised if they make it through that with a winning record. I think you beat Colorado State, Nebraska, you know, kind of depends on how quickly they're rebuilding. They're not, I just seriously doubt they're going to beat any of those three other TCU, the team that went to the national championship game last year, or USC or Oregon. I think you're right about the trajectory, that they'll probably have a pretty rough first year and then they could get a lot better like Arizona did. But I think the ceiling is higher than Arizona. Like, I don't think they have to settle for 5-7 in the second year because Deion's recruiting a higher caliber of players than Jed Fish was able to do. And Jed Fish actually recruited pretty well and got some big transfers in. But, I mean, he didn't get Travis Hunter.
Did have arguably the best receiver on the West Coast. Tetteroa McMillan was a guy everybody wanted.
But I would think by year two, Deion will have 10 of those guys, you know, and then a lot of other good players beneath that. So it's way too early to say what they might do in 2024. But I do think that the ceiling is like Arizona season went almost exactly as I predicted it would. I thought they would. I think I might have picked them to go 5-7. I knew from the transfers coming in, from the freshman class, from the quarterback, Jaden Delora, that they were going to be a lot better. And I would expect a similar leap. It'll be interesting, though, if Colorado goes 3-9 this year, which probably is more realistic than some other things, will all the Deion buzz wear off? Or will people just kind of be realistic about it and say, you know, he needed a year and let's see what he does in year two. Who knows what other high profile transfers or recruits he will have brought in by then. But 30,000 tickets to the spring game is just incredible. ESPN showing their spring game, a team that was an uncompetitive 1-11 last year, suddenly is on main ESPN for the spring game. What a world we live in.
By the way, you're not about the photos. I'm looking at Tom Herman's picture in our athletic story for Chris Vanini's piece. Tom Herman looks like a younger Mark D'Antonio in the picture.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's not a look he's exhibited before, but I know he's slimmed down since he was last at Texas. So he could look about just about anybody right now. We do not have mailbag questions this week, and I think it's our fault. We've answered so few of them recently that you guys have just plain stopped sending them. So I'm putting out a call, theaudiblepod@gmail.com, full-blown mailbag segment next week, promise, and we'll see you next time.